Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Broadcast week on the horn. And once again, I'm trying to figure out whether or not I actually have microphone audio. We may be sort of on the way to the graveyard of mixed discs. I'm not sure. Preamps only last so long. But we'll get through. It is Monday. It is day 10 of your war on the people of Libya. I'm reminded of a poem by E.E. Cummings. You know, E.E. Cummings' poetry was much more visual than spoken, but still, the spoken language itself is quite profound. And somewhere around about the beginning of the 20th century, with a distaste for peace breaking out all over, E.E. Cummings wrote, and remember, all kinds of weird punctuation and stuff, and no real titles, and it's all over the page. But E.E. Cummings wrote, "Buffalo Bill's defunct, who used to ride a water-smooth silver stallion and break 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pigeons just like that. Jesus, he was a handsome man. And what I want to know is, how do you like your blue-eyed boy, Mr. Death?" There's something about bombing some more brown people that just called that to mind for me. Bombing our way to peace and prosperity, oh joy. Goody for us. Still not bombing Israel for its assaults on Gaza. Even though God knows the Gazans have called out to the world community as the Libyans did. Now we're not doing that. Whole lot of stuff that we're not doing. And I reckon we don't count on doing anytime soon. But, you know. No, I know a couple of people sent me links to Juan Cole's essay supporting dropping bombs on brown people. And I understand what he writes. I certainly do. He says, "I am unabashedly cheering the liberation movement on and glad that the UNSC, UN Security Council, authorized intervention, has saved them from being crushed." Yeah. It remains to be seen whether they have been saved from being crushed. But my problem with Juan Cole's analysis is that Juan Cole presupposes his conclusions on assumptions. You know, if we assume A, then we can assume B. It's like the old story about the civil engineer, the mechanical engineer, and the economist who are stranded on a desert island. And there's canned goods there that washed up with the ship that wrecked that they were on. But they don't have any can openers. So the mechanical engineer says he'll take the first run at it. and he comes up with this complicated thing, sort of like something off Gilligan's Island, and there's, you know, the, right, you, it's a machine. The civil engineer comes up with something whereby he utilizes the environment to create an opening in the can. Then they come to the economist, and they said, well, what have you got? And the economist says, assume a can opener. Well, that's what Juan Cole does. He makes a bunch of assumptions in order to justify the fact that he's okay with dropping bombs on brown people. Whereas, I simply am not. Because I see war as a very, very personal thing and not the sort of sterile, surgical sort of thing that it is portrayed to us in the for-profit media as being. Somewhere along the way, some mother's son, some mother's daughter, some mother, some father, some uncle, some aunt, some cousin is going to wind up limbless, headless, and you know what? We will have done that. Oh, but Bob, they were bad people. You know what? We're not going to get the bad people. We're going to bomb the people who were scared of the bad people. Of course, you know, they can get out of their tanks and run away and be shot by other brown people who are bad people working for the worse people. It's really a lose-lose situation. There's no winning. And at the end of it all, I would say there is better than a 10-to-1 chance that Muammar Gaddafi will still be alive. Which, to me, is a sort of way of defining failure in this whole situation. But at any rate, now, I read Juan Cole's piece early this morning. I was not convinced. Juan Cole doesn't like any of the things that some of us say that war, you know, the reasons that it can't work and won't work. So in the end, and this was what kind of pushed me over the edge. In the end, Juan Cole decides to quote either, I forget if it was Dick Cheney or Donald Rumsfeld. And he says that we need to learn to chew gum and walk at the same time. I remember when the Bush administration used that very same analogy. Well, we can walk and chew gum at the same time. Yeah. But anyway, it is Moran Monday. Although this Moran Monday is tempered by more than a little bit of grief. Let's say this and sort of let it temper the rest of the program. I got up this morning to news that just it felt like kin folks had passed away. Joe Bagent is dead. It didn't take very long at all for the brain cancer that attacked his body to take him down. And he died yesterday in Virginia. He leaves behind a stunning body of work in the form of essays and two books, one of which is Deer Hunting with Jesus, and the other is available for order or pre-order or some such at Amazon now, and it's called Rainbow Pie. And it deserves a broad reading. And in fact, I'm going to do something, and I hope Joe's friends and associates won't mind. I'm going to try to give you a reason for going and obtaining this book. (Clears And it comes from the prelude, or the prologue, or the opening to the book. And he says, when World War II began, 44% of Americans were rural, and over half of them farmed for a living. By 1970, only 5% were on farms. Altogether, more than 22 million migrated to urban areas during the post-war period. If that migration were to happen in reverse today, it would be the equivalent of the present populations of New York City, Chicago, Miami, Philadelphia, Boston, and St. Louis, moving out into the countryside at a time when the U.S. population was half of its present size. In the great swim upstream toward what was being heralded as a new American prosperity, most of these 22 million never made it to the first fish ladder. Stuck socially, economically, and educationally at or near the bottom of the dam, they raised children and grandchildren who added another 40 million to the swarm. These uneducated rural whites became the foundation of our permanent white underclass. Their children and grandchildren have added to the numbers of this underclass, probably in the neighborhood of 50 or 60 million people now. They outnumber all other poor and working poor groups, black, Hispanics, immigrants. Even as the white underclass was accumulating, it was being hidden, buried under a narrative proclaiming otherwise. The popular imagination was swamped with images that remain today as the national memory of that era. Nearly all of these images were products of advertising. In the standard depiction, our warriors returned to the land, kept free by their valor, exhilarated by victory, and ready to raise families. They purchased little white cottages and Buick Roadmaster sedans, and then drove off into the unlimited horizons of the land of happy motoring. A government brochure of the time assured everyone that an onrushing new age of opportunity, prosperity, convenience, and comfort has arrived for all Americans. I quoted this to an old World War II veteran named Ernie over an egg sandwich at the Twilight Zone Grill near my home in town. Ernie answered, "I wish somebody had told me, I would have waved at the prosperity as it went by." According to this officially sanctioned story of the great post-war migration, these people abandoned farm life in such droves because the money, excitement, and allure of America's cities and large towns was just too great to resist. Why would anyone stay down on the farm when he or she could be wearing $10 shoes and eating rainbow pie? One catches a whiff of urban bias perception here, but then the official version of all life and culture in America is written by city people. Our dominant history, analysis, and images of America are generated in the urban centers. Social research institutions, major universities, and the media such as ABC, HBO, PBS, and the Harvard University Sociology Department are not located in Keokuk, Iowa, Fisher, Illinois, Winchester, Virginia, or Lubbock, Texas. Joe continues, "I grew up hard by the Blue Ridge Mountains of Virginia and West Virginia, and am a product of that out-migration. And as I said, grew up watching it happen around me. I'm here to tell you, dear hearts, that while all those university professors may have had their sociological data and industrial statistics verified and well-indexed, they're way off base. They've entirely overshot the on-the-ground experience. In fact, they don't even deal with it. You won't be surprised to hear that the media representation of the post-war era, and let's face it, more people watch the History Channel than read social history texts, is as full of crap as an overfed Christmas goose." And that's just from the prologue. Rainbow Pie. You can get a copy of it via Amazon in the very, very near future. Goodbye, Joe. I'm glad to have gotten to know you, though not nearly well enough. That's the thing. You lose a Joe Bajant and you feel like you've really, really lost something. But have you ever noticed that there doesn't seem to be a steady stream of notices that the Tucker Carlsons of this world and the Andrew Breitbarts and the James O'Keefes and the George Wills and the God knows Pat Buchanans have not shuffled off this mortal coil, but continue hanging around, spewing their vomitous filth, and poisoning the world in which we live? Ours is a small band. We of good conscience, determination, compassion, goodwill. Ours is a small band. And so it is that when one on our side goes away, we feel the loss all the more. And so it is that, yeah, I feel a real sense of loss for the stilled pen and quieted voice of Job Agent. But there is a show to do, and do it we will. Oh yes, do it we will. We've a Moran Monday to address. And God knows we have nominees. So, by all means, sorry, I'm having a little bit of a hard time just sort of getting into the spirit of things. But by all means, let us get behind the tent, or into the tent. Because brethren and sisters, kitties and cousins, aunts and uncles, it's Moran Monday on the Horn. Hurry, 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 step right up, get your program. This is the only program where you can find out about the Morans as they scurry and slither around our body politic, our body social, our body cultural, our nation. Like a bad case of the crabs you can't get rid of, the Morans are here among us. And if you get your program, the only program, this program that will help you tell the Morans from the normal, well, you can step behind, my friends, my very good friends, step behind this thin cybernetic sheet and into the tent where you will have visited upon you Moranic horrors unspeakable. Head for the hills or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans. It is Moran Monday on the Horn. And we have Morans for you. Where do we begin? Let's begin. Well, really, you could argue that we should be saving this one for Wednesday. But it just won't last that long. No. Religious Morans are among the most engaging Morans, clad as they are in their piety and their sense of purpose and mission. And that sense of purpose and mission was not any more present in anyone on the planet than it was in Brent Giroux. God, why couldn't he be named Jones? G-I-R-O-U-E-X. Giroux-A-Giroux-X. Brent Giroux-A. I don't know. 31 years old and full of Christ's love. He was concerned about the homosexuals. Yes, he was. He was concerned that members of his flock, brethren and sisters, might be tempted by the sins of the flesh and the love that dare not speak its name. He has been arrested on 60 counts of suspicion of sexual exploitation by a counselor or therapist. That happened earlier this month. Here's the real hoot. He's out on bail. He was released on a $30,000 bond. He goes back to court on April the 21st on those 60 counts of suspicion of sexual exploitation by a counselor or therapist. Now, what was he doing? Yes, the details are... Well, we don't have to name names. But it is important to know that Brent Giroux, youth pastor, age 31, of Council Bluffs, Iowa, well, he has made abundantly clear to the authorities that his concern was that his young charges obtain, this is a quote, this ain't old Bob making it up, this is a quote, that his young charges obtain sexual purity in the eyes of God. Now here's the part where it gets a little bit warped and it's a little hard to figure out. In order to obtain the sexual purity in the eyes of God, the way he did it was by having sex with young men in his charge. It started out with one person coming forward, and then the floodgates opened, and it has since expanded to at least 8 people who have spoken up about the things that Brent Giroux, don't know, did with them. Over at Victory Fellowship Church, the Reverend Lonnie Parton has said, "We are stunned. We are stunned that this happened. Those 4 young men came forward and told us what he done last February, and we were stunned." Naturally, Reverend Parton told 31-year-old Brent Giroux that he needed to go to the police and make a full confession. He did that. Now, bear in mind that Reverend Parton probably sent him to make the full confession so as to try to limit the liability of his church for the acts of sexual predation that had been practiced in its name. "Well, man, I found out about it. I told him to go to the church and go to the police and confess. Confession was good for the soul. It's also a pretty good defense, too." Now, Brent told investigators that at most, he'd had sex with one teenage boy over a 4-year period, starting when the boy was 14 years old. He figured he'd probably had mutual sexual contact with the teenager between 25 and 50 times over those 4 years. That's a lot of sexual purity. Well, the teenager, who's now an adult, said, "No, it was like between 50 and 100 times." As a youth pastor, our friend Brent, servant of God, said that his job as a youth pastor made it his duty, and this is a quote again, to help him with homosexual urges by praying while he had sexual contact with him. I will leave it to lesser souls to try to figure out how you do that. But then, drip, 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 more folks began to come forward. 3 more people at least came forward and told investigators that the events happened in Brent's home. They went to the home, Brent's home, to be helped with, again, that phrase, sexual purity. Another man said he was a full-grown adult, 23 years old, and Brent, and he was having problems with his wife. And Brent wanted to help him with his issues. Issues indeed. The man says Brent Giroux pulled down his pants and began to touch his genitals. Then there's another young fellow who said over a 5-week period when he was 20 years old, Giroux slowly evolved sexually contacting him from touching him over his clothes to oral sex. Insert speaking in tongues joke here. Court documents stated Giroux said during all of the incidents it was only about, quote, helping the victims gain sexual purity. He allegedly told detectives, and this is a quote too, when they would ejaculate, they would be getting rid of the evil thoughts in their mind. Jim, with his working knowledge of history over the years, said, I don't even know 60 people. But by the way, Rasputin espoused the same philosophy, except with women. You know, that's the nice thing about an authoritarian religion. All you got to do is say, I had a vision, Jesus told me so, and then when you get caught, then you go, you come back with the Flip Wilson defense, the devil made me do it. Just sometimes it's hard to tell the difference between the voices. Brent, bring them sexual purity. Is that you, Lord? Yeah, it's me. At least Fred Flintstone got the little devil Fred Flintstone on one shoulder and the little angel Fred Flintstone on the other. Yeah, that way you can at least tell who's doing right. Rent Zero X, help them obtain sexual purity by... Really, Lord? Oh, absolutely. The evil thoughts will leave them when they... Oh, dear. You know, you can kind of tell that it's going to be a busy Moran Monday when it starts this way. Now, see, there's Lottie in the chat room. There's Lottie in the chat room, going where I was trying not to go. Speaking in tongues while performing? No. I'm not going to do it, Lottie. You can't make me. Just not going to do it. What do you... But seriously, if you're the parent of one of these young men, and you're a churchgoer there to attend. What's the name of the place? The Reverend Lonnie Parton of Victory Fellowship Church. Hey, Mom, I'm going over to Brother Brent's for some sexual purity lessons. See you later, Mom. Okay, you tell that young Brent, he's a fine fella. You tell him we'll be praying for him. God bless him. Oh, I think that's nice that he goes over to the youth minister's house and learns about sexual purity. Maybe when he's a little older, we can have a purity ball. And see, once again, it's worth pointing out that this isn't necessarily about sex. This is about power. This is about dominance. And more than anything else, if it is about sex, it's about the great, big, deep, dark, scary closet that is organized religion. And between Brent Zero X and, say, oh, I don't know, Newt Gingrich, except for age differences, what is the difference? Dear God, I mean, you want to talk about a moron. Newt Gingrich actually had the nerve, I suppose, to claim, and it's hard to say this without laughing, so pardon me. Newt Gingrich actually had the nerve to say that he committed adultery and went through wives like some of us change socks because he was just too patriotic for his own good. Which is sort of a variation on the theme of the devil made me do it, or I was doing it for Jesus. This time Uncle Sam took the blame. Yeah, Uncle Sam made me a horn dog. Honestly, would a liberal, a progressive, even a blue dog Democrat ever have the nerve to make that argument? Nah, me either. I mean, Jeebus. Uncle Sam made me horny? That's astonishing. And, you know, he didn't just quietly say it to... He didn't... It's not... Well, honey, you know, I only did that because I love America so much. He did this on the air. Among other things. He told Chris Wallace that by being a dirty little horn dog, he was better able to understand how to impeach Bill Clinton. Really? I mean... That's some brass. But see, that's also the beauty of fundamental, because all you have to do is put that bumper sticker on the back of your car that says, not perfect, just forgiven. And bang, there you are. Well, probably ought not use the word bang, should I? But he really did say it. And, of course, the place you go to say that Uncle Sam made you so horny you couldn't stand yourself, where else would you go but... Yeah. The Christian Broadcasting Network.
You know the question, and I'm not going to ask it the way everybody else will ask it, but as it relates to the past and some of those personal issues that you've had, you know, you've talked about how God is a forgiving God. And I'd like you to expand upon that as you went through some of those difficulties, how you saw God's forgiving nature in all of that.
Well, I mean, first of all, there's no question that at times in my life, partially driven by how passionately I felt about this country, that I worked far too hard, and that things happened in my life that were not appropriate. And what I can tell you is that when I did things that were wrong, I wasn't trapped in situation ethics. I was doing things that were wrong, and yet I was doing them. I found that I was felt compelled to seek God's forgiveness. Not God's understanding, but God's forgiveness. And that I do believe in a forgiving God. And I think most people, deep down in their hearts, hope there's a forgiving God. Somebody once said that when we're young, we seek justice, but as we get older, we seek mercy. And there's something to that, I think. I feel that, I mean, I'm now, you know, 67. And I am a grandfather. I have two wonderful grandchildren. I have two wonderful daughters and two great sons-in-law. Chris and I have a great marriage, and I think that I've learned an immense amount. And
it's
I do
great.
Feel that God, in that sense, has blessed me with an opportunity as a person. I mean, forgetting all this political stuff, as a person, I've had the opportunity to have a wonderful life and to find myself now truly enjoying the depths of my life in ways that I never dreamed was possible to have a life that was that nice.
Yeah, it's a wonderful life. Zuzu pedals! Zuzu pedals! Hello, town! God. yeah, Betsy. How about a forgiving wife? Never mind the forgiving God. There we are back to, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Dalmer? The laws of Mississippi are considerably more stringent than the forgiveness of God. You may be forgiven in the eyes of God, but in the eyes of the state of Mississippi, you still have a debt to pay. Yeah, that wife, not so forgiving, no. Not exactly. My God, the nerve. The nerve. Is that just stunning, the nerve? And then the blogger writing about it from the Brody file, you know, another semi-literate fundamentalist. The Brody file sat down with Gingrich Monday afternoon at the Machine Shed restaurant in the suburbs of Des Moines before the big Iowa Faith and Freedom event. We're posting three clips from the interview below with transcriptions. There will be those evangelicals who can't get past Gingrich's transgressions from earlier in his life. makes it sound like it happened, you know, in the back seat when he was 16. Not exactly. But let's remember, evangelicals know all about grace and redemption, too. What did I tell you? And if Gingrich can connect on issues important to evangelicals, especially in Iowa and South Carolina, where some of the dumbest evangelicals on earth happen to live, I added that part, then look out! He has a path to the nomination. Don't write him off. He can compete strongly for the evangelical vote. Now, there's no question at times in my life, partially driven by how passionately I felt about this country, that I worked far too hard and things happened in my life that were not appropriate. He couldn't tell his passion for the country. He couldn't tell the difference between his passion for the country and the passion in his pants. Now, I'm just asking from an academic standpoint, do you really want that guy walking around with the nuclear football? I mean, I know there's a lot of people pissed off at Barack Obama. Sometimes I'm one of them. Not real happy about this concept of bombing our way to peace and prosperity. And I know what's going to happen on, what is it, November the 6th, 2012? I know where I'm going to be and what I'm going to be doing. Because there is no way, I mean there is just no way, that I want a guy who thinks that he can blow the world to kingdom come, or screw it, and then just say, my bad, God, you're a forgiving God, right? That, I thought you were good. There, all forgiven. Nice. Ron in Raleigh writing, we've all heard the old hymn, there's power in the blood. It is said that there is power in the blood. I guess there's power in other precious bodily fluids as well. I added the precious part just because it's so god-awful Dr. Strangelove, but that, you know, that's a good, Jesus God. I mean, they're stupid, and then they're stupid. And speaking of they're stupid and then they're stupid, let's go see what was on Fox. Oh, wait, this is too good. What was on Fox? Donald Trump was on Fox. Donald and that wombat that lives on top of his head have gone all in with the birthers. Now, really, you didn't expect me to leave this alone on Morion Monday, did you? No. So what happens is when some crazy wingnut bastard goes on The View, then they go on to Radio Rwanda to explain why it is that those women are really mean over on The View.
John McCain for his birth certificate. They've asked others for their birth certificate. They asked Bush for his birth certificate, by the way, I just found out over the weekend. Mm-hmm. And they would ask me for my birth certificate. And by the way, it's sitting on the top of my desk. They give you a certificate of live birth, which anybody can get. Just walk into the hospital and you get a certificate of live birth. It's not even signed by
sure.
people.
Right.
Now, you know, this guy either has a birth certificate or he doesn't. And I didn't think this was such a big deal, but I will tell you, it's turning out to be a very
right.
big deal, because people now are calling me from all over saying, please don't give up on this issue. If you aren't born in this country, you cannot be
right.
president.
Do you think he was born in this country?
I am really concerned, and I will tell you, when this all started a week ago, I assumed, hey, look, you have no doctors that remember. You have no nurses. This is the President of the United States that remember. That ad that was placed in the Houston paper, that was placed in the paper days after he was born.
Sure.
So he could have come into the country, and they
right.
did it for social reasons they put it in. They did it for whatever reasons.
Right.
There are a lot of reasons you could have put an ad in, but he could have been born outside of this country. Why can't he produce a birth certificate? And by the way, there's one story that his family doesn't even know what hospital he was born in.
Yeah, I've heard that as well. Donald, before you go, what about the mainstream media accounts of this dust-up over the last week where they're trying to paint you as you know, the mayor of Crazy Town for bringing this up.
Well, you know, it's amazing. I start off, every time I talk about the birthers, I start off by saying, and it's very interesting, I was a great student at the best college in the country. You know, I want to let people know I'm a smart guy. Mm-hmm. Because what they do to the birthers, and it's, I don't even like the term the birthers. I think it's unfair to them. These are people who want to see a birth certificate. They want to know that the president was born here.
But why would you go, down this path, Donald? A lot of people were asking that question last week as well. Why would you decide to do this if, in fact, you decide to run for president?
Because if you're not born in the United States, you cannot be president. And there's a real question. And if this birth certificate exists, you know what I get a kick out of? The governor of Hawaii says, I remember when he was born 50 years ago. I doubt it. I think this guy should be investigated. I doubt. He remembers when Obama was born. Give me a break. He's just trying to do something for his party. The fact is, if you're not born in the United States, right, you cannot be president. He is having a hard time. He spent millions of dollars trying to get away from this issue. Millions of dollars in legal fees trying to get away from this issue. And I'll tell you what, I brought it up just routinely, and all of a sudden, a lot of facts are emerging, and I'm starting to wonder myself whether or not he was born in this country.
So it's not going away in your mind. Donald Trump, who we all know was born in this country, all you have to do is read the side of his building. Donald, Celebrity Apprentice, going well. Thanks so much for joining us. We look forward to this every Monday.
Thank you very much.
Every Monday? That crap goes down every Monday? Okay, so Donald Trump was born in America, but was that thing on his head? Because, you know what, I want to see proof that that's actual human hair. And I want him to spend millions trying to get away from that issue, because he will. Yeah, they're nuts. You know, I don't think that's very nice to call them birthers. Well, God almighty, Donald, the only thing we're left with is Moran. And granted, they are Morans, but I'm sure you wouldn't like that either. Because you don't call somebody a genius who has an IQ of 2.5. It's one of what will become a long line of I miss Joe Bajent moments. Now, you know, Donald Trump, presidentially speaking, Donald Trump has a bankruptcy problem the way that Newt Gingrich has divorce problems. You know, that goober said, oh, yeah, don't sell him out. Don't sell him short. He can get the evangelical vote, and if he wins with the Morans in Iowa and South Carolina, hoo-wee! There's only one problem. While they can play that not perfect, just forgiven business all day long, Jesus was a little bit, well, no, he was a whole lot unequivocal about divorce. Don't do it. You can't do it. And so, I mean, like, there are Baptist ministers that won't perform a marriage ceremony for a couple if one of them's been divorced. It's one and done with that bunch. Supposedly it's very much nearly the same thing with the Roman Catholic Church. One and done. Unless somebody gets dead. Oh, yeah. It's Moran Monday on the horn. No doubt about it. And you know what? We haven't even scratched the surface. Nope. We got more. Remember, you know how we all love to hate, Chuck Norris? I've got another former action star to despise. We can do that too. But for now, let's open up the phone lines. It's Moran Monday. You may have nominations of your own. And by all means, I think you should bring them to the table. You know the number. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on. On your nickel, 304-658-3333. And we go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, you got me, Bob.
Hey, Jim, what's up?
You.
Meanwhile, me and Rasputin.
You and... right. You know, Trump's on Fox Business News about every other morning. He's one of Don Imus's boys.
Oh, no, I didn't realize. Okay.
And I tuned into that show just to see what Rob, what's his name, is doing, but and to see what idiocy Don Imus is up to and see what kind of thing he's got sitting on top of his head.
Well, you know, there's a lot of people that tune in for exactly those train wreck sort of reasons.
Yeah, I know. But, I mean, Trump's been saying this shit for months, and he's been saying he's going to run for president. And he says he's man for the job. If you don't believe it, just ask him.
You know, the one thing I find interesting is that he's got something out there in his past that is going to make the teabaggers even angrier than the birth certificate business.
What's that?
In 1999, he was thinking about running back then, too.
Oh, yeah.
And in 1999, he suggested that we solve the deficit because, you know, they were deficit, they were losing their minds back then, too. We solve our economic issues by what he termed a one-time, across-the-board, 14.75% tax on all estates over $10 million.
Hmm.
And it actually might make some sense, but it ain't going to play real good.
I wouldn't think so. I wonder if he's espousing that now.
Oh, no. That was probably evil Donald, or... you know, one of his bankruptcy Donalds.
I don't understand that, man. And, you know, that is his hair. It's just tortured forward, and whoever does the torturing must have worked for Torquemada.
Well, or with a torque wrench. Ooh, I'm on.
yeah. But, I mean, talk about... I could see him be playing in Andrews Air Force Base with a shoulder-length fringe.
Well, and that's what I want to. You know, what does it look like before they get after it with the mousse and the lacquer and the varnish? And it, where is it? Is that just like some? Is it some sort of? Does he look like Riff Raff before they get at him with the hair care products? You know, Riff Raff from Rocky Horror. Is that what he looks like?
Yeah, that's about it. Riff Raff will do. Riff Raff will certainly do. I mean, hell, at least Riff Raff looked pretty good when he had it back in a ponytail.
But that was the best I could come up with because, you know, there's so much length of it, you know, coming forward with that sort of flat iron ski slope kind of... it's got to all be in the back. So immediately I just, oh, look, that's Riff Raff.
I mean, with his money, he ought to at least be able to get a respectable...
Well, I mean, you know, I imagine people like Elton John take his phone calls and stuff. Just dial him up and say, Elton, buddy, who did the transfer? Who did the plugs?
Well, that's Elton's hair.
Yeah, it's plugs.
No, it's not.
That's a piece?
Yeah. Just a well-made hair piece.
Oh, I thought he had plugs.
Nah. Elton didn't have an assortment, I don't think. But, I mean, I can look at it sometimes and tell that, you know, it's a rug, but it's a well-made one.
And, you know, hair club for Donald.
But, I believe that's, that was contrived. But it doesn't make any difference. The guy makes good music and, you know.
Yeah, he doesn't play piano with his hair.
No, he doesn't. You may have thought Liberace did, but...
Oh, you're irrepressible tonight, Jim.
Well,
but what do you expect when we start the program out with sexual purity and?
This is my next. Excuse me, you took me unaware. I was just trying to find the top of a smokeless ashtray that somehow got dumped in the garbage with a battery. Can you believe that?
Bad time to be doing that.
Yeah, but that's the reason. I probably sound like I've been wrestling a lion or a cat or whatever. But I mean, when you start with this guy, was it 60 counts or 60 people?
60 counts, 8 people.
Oh.
60 counts is where they're starting because they've only charged him with suspicion of. After they're done with all the witness interviews, they'll be down to the substantive crimes.
Well, I think it's saved with 60 people. He's either very good at it or he's very bad at it. I mean, I don't know.
Well, there was just a lot of impurity, Jim.
Of course, and he... ejaculation equals expiation. Is that it?
You know what? I will have to defer to the church fathers of the Liberation Fellowship Theology Tabernacle or wherever it was.
But is that the... is that it in three words or less?
Yes, yes, ejaculation equals expiation.
Oh, dear. And, of course, Newt Gingrich says that his love for his country made him horny.
As hell, yes.
Bob, that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard in my life. And, you know, I would not have the nerve or the lack of common sense to even touch that or say even things like that.
But he's Newt Gingrich. And consider, you know, again, consider to whom he is speaking, Jim. He's
good Lord. I mean, the guy left his first wife or proposed divorce to his first wife, which he was still abed after having a breast removed from cancer. And then how many others have there been? Two more?
At least one.
Well, I want to ask
because
you.
Because he married the woman. Let's get it straight. The woman he was cheating with while his first wife was recovering from cancer and he was divorcing her, he cheated on that spouse with the present Mrs. Gangrene named Callista.
Callista.
Yes.
I'm sorry. Callista?
No, really.
As in ballista.
Yeah.
I see. Well, that's got to be one of the most ridiculous fucking things I have ever heard in my life to equate one's patriotism with one's sex drive or libido.
You know, I don't want to be anywhere around him when they're playing the national anthem. Not without a Kleenex.
I just can't understand who'd want to go to bed with a man like that. I certainly wouldn't.
Callista. See, Callista was an intern at the same time that Monica Lewinsky was an intern.
You know, my grandfather used to say, son, a woman's love is like the morning dew. It can settle on a rose or a pile of shit.
But settle it does.
Good Lord. I mean...
Well, the whole team is on board now. I just heard from David in Tennessee, Jim. With regard to all that sexual purity,
yeah,
David said it's a hand or hard job, but somebody had to do it. I think I'm just going to turn the mic off and just let everybody.
I just don't understand how anybody could reasonably manufacture sex ejaculation equals expiation. And my patriotism for my country made me do it. I mean...
Well, does this mean we have to rewrite the song and retitle it My Country Jizz of Thee?
Whatever. But I mean...
Oh, come on, Jim. Give me a little help here. That was good.
Like reading that book, Candy, by Terry Southern and Mason Hoffenberg. Remember that one?
No.
Oh, you never... It's a Voltaire... Excuse me. It's a spoof on Voltaire's Candide.
No, I never did.
References all types of sexual acts. They even made a movie with Marlon Brando as the guru, but nonetheless, it's about this girl who just does it with everybody and gives these ridiculous answers, very much akin to the things that you've expressed tonight from this whiz jizz pastor to horny Newt with a flagpole up his rear end, but nonetheless, it was written by these guys, Terry Southern, Mason Hoffenberg, in Paris, and it was written in 12 hours when they both were on methamphetamines. But it made a marvelous read.
Well, I'm glad to know that something good came of meth usage.
Well, I mean, this is a book. If you could see the movie Candy. I mean, but this is something like from the pages of that book. And the excuses for sexual misconduct and promiscuity were very much akin to what these people are saying and what you said tonight. That's the reason I brought it up. But, I mean, it's just so ridiculous, it's beyond the pale. Bob, I wouldn't have the nerve to say something like that. I wouldn't have the balls.
And you know what? That's why you're not running for president as a right-wing Republican evangelical. Because you have to be willing to say that kind of stuff. It's all, you know, it's all ends driven. So if you're talking to the evangelicals, you can talk about all the wicked stuff you did and say, and then I heard the voice of my Lord and he done forgive me and I'm forgiven. Hallelujah. And the crowd goes wild.
Well, I guess these people believe that they can just do anything without any consequence whatsoever.
You exactly.
Know, is a term in my world that, you know, when you play, you pay.
Yeah.
And there ain't no free lunch.
Our buddy Brandon is driving down the road right now. That's how cool it is. You can now drive down the road and listen to the horn live. He said, I'm driving and laughing my ass off about Donald the Birther Trump. But my issue is with the religion industry's romantic affair with Newt Gingrich. It's okay to give the newt a pass about his cheating heart, but President Obama's still a Muslim in their eyes. Can you say whitepocrisy? Yeah.
Well, what about Bill Clinton? I mean, nobody was offering to say he was forgiven. All those people did was try to ruin that man and try to drive him out of the White House. I mean, there's such a disparity here. It's just pure, like you said earlier, it's just pure fucking hypocrisy. And they think that they can actually, well, I guess there are people in this country who believe what these people say. That's the scary thing about it.
And they are, no, here's the scary part, Jim. They're allowed to vote.
Yeah, they are. And that really worries me a lot more than anything about Obama's birth certificate. But I mean, you should, you don't get the Fox Business News Network like I do. I tune into it. But you should hear Donald brag about himself. Oh, he's really something.
Oh, I heard the line about, you know, I screwed Gaddafi. I screwed him.
Yeah, that's where that came from, you know. And he said that on Fox News, too, and all those idiots up there. I don't know which one. They're like the Stygian witches who had one eye between them, and I think those people on Fox had one brain between them, and I don't know which one was keeping the brain on that particular morning. I happen to flip past Fox, and I normally have it blocked from my with my remote, but I heard that, and, you know, he was going on with that same crap that you were playing earlier. It was the same broadcast, as a matter of fact. But that asshole was serious about running for president. And he told Imus on Fox Business News Network, he said, now, Don, I know you're conservative, but you don't know how conservative I really am. And he was saying it using these very menacing, very threatening tones.
Well, you know, that's the, but that, again, I refer you to the joy of republicanism. He can say he's conservative, but, you know, 12 years ago, he was putting forward a plan to tax all estates over $10 million to the tune of 14.75% flat.
Well, he's the kind of person who basically...
And by the way, yeah, I really do have to watch Candy now. I just got the IMDb link from our buddy Ron and Raleigh, and Buck Henry is the writer. So, you know...
Well, Terry Southern and Mason Hoffenberg wrote the book.
Right, but the script writer was Buck Henry, and he didn't know how to script. Yeah.
If he looks up the book, he'll see it was these two guys, Terry Sullivan and Mason Hoffenberg. Because I read it when I was a sophomore in college in 2 hours between lunch and drill.
My God, Marlon Brando, John Huston, Ringo Starr, Richard Burton, Walter Matthau. Oh, it's an all-star cast.
Richard Burton plays Professor McPhisto. And one of his lines is that I will devour the land and drink up the sea and all this time this wind is flowing through his hair to satiate my unmitigated lust.
What a line.
But, I mean, it was just...
James Coburn?
Yeah, and
wow.
He had his traveling ashram in the back of a double-wide semi. No, it was just a regular trailer. And at the end, and Marlon Brando levitates. Between that movie and another one that came out at the same time called The Magic Christian with Peter Sellers.
Oh, that's a personal favorite.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, it's just incredible. But you have to read the book to really appreciate the movie. But I mean, hey, look up on Wikipedia about Candy. You'll find their names and the story of its creation and its basis on Voltaire's Candide. But I mean, getting back to what we were saying earlier, you know, just when you think that you've heard it all and seen it all, well, you get something else. And ejaculation equals expiation. One life, one wife, right? Patriotism equals the license to go out and screw anything that walks, right?
Yeah, well, what was the name of the dallying Republican in Wisconsin, Randy Hopper?
That's too good to be his name.
No, it really is.
You're making that up.
No, I'm not. I am not.
Liar, liar, pass on fire.
Sorry, no.
All right, go
no,
ahead.
No, no, no. Yeah, this is a close personal friend of Governor Snot Walker.
Randy Hopper.
Yeah, and he's one of those state senators who voted to, you know, the kill the collective bargaining rights of working people. And so they went to protest Wisconsinites, whatever, went to protest at his home address. Right?
Randy Hopper, okay.
Right, Senator Randy Hopper.
Well,
Mrs. Hopper answered the door and said, "Folks, I'd love to help you out, but Randy's not here. He lives in Madison now with his girlfriend."
What was her first name? Ho?
Stop it. But she said, "By the way, I'll be. Do you have that recall petition for Randy? Because I'd like to sign it, and so would the maid."
Guess they would. Well, I mean, I've heard people use different types of noms and gares, but what about Dick Hard? I mean, that's pretty good too, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, and God knows how many 14-year-olds have placed how many prank phone calls to how many bars, asking for any of those people.
Well, call up and ask for Mike Hunt.
Yeah, and Richard Smoker, and right.
I always like Mike Hunt. Tell you the truth.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say that twice.
I said, "My butt."
Yes, I know you did. Jim, have a good night. We're off to a roaring start.
Well, I hope so. I hope you get your mixer fixed and all that stuff.
Oh, it's probably going to take a new one, and when this thing burns up, we're screwed.
Well, I've got a red KitchenAid that's never been used. Will that help?
Yes. Wrong mixer.
Oh, sorry.
You probably don't have the dough hook anyway.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, I knew you would. Take it easy, Jim.
By the way, I keep that one in the bedroom.
Got to get that rim shot back in here. Kid took my piano away, and, well, what are you going to do?
I'll see you later.
Later, Jim. Bye now. Oh, God. Well, this show went straight to hell in a hurry, didn't it? But, you know, that's kind of how it is with Moran Monday. Everybody has apparently seen Candy but me. So I guess I gotta. When I'm getting emails about people's favorite portions of the novel, So here we are at about 4 minutes past the hour. We're going to take our top of the hour break. And in light of, this is for you, Randy Hopper, and you Brent Giroux X, and you Newt Gingrich. You know, I guess the only reason Trump isn't in any trouble for this is that, he hasn't been caught, you know, having sex with a pile of money or something. Or his hair, who knows. But this is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and we'll be right back.
know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at CityNet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit CityNet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
Hey guys, I know I don't say this enough, but I'm going to say it now. When push comes to shove, you guys are always there for me. And you really hung in there. And look, you've always been so close to me. So don't take this the wrong way, but I got you something. I love you guys.
Aw, we love you too.
I love you guys. Powder for your nads by Bubble Genius.
BubbleGenius.com.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Yes, it most certainly is, and I'm going to try my darndest to turn back into a respectable conversation radio host sometime in the next few minutes. But, you know, with y'all, sometimes it's just too damn difficult. I never should have brought up, well, but how do you not? How do you not talk about a sexual predator like Brent Giroux? That's just what I'm going with. Yeah, I know, the Cajun pronunciation. But no, Brent Giroux, that's just what he is. Rhymes with sex. That's why. Sexual predators are sexual predators, whether it's a youth pastor in Iowa trying to masturbate the demons out of, you know, 15-year-olds, or whether it's Newt Gingrich, you know, with, I don't know, flag-draped condoms. It's all the same, and it's all nasty. Not the sex. Sex is cool. But, what's that great line from one of our favorite songs, Alabama Jesus? It's not the heat, it's the hypocrisy. It's not the heat, it's the hypocrisy. Yeah, tell them about it, Tweety Bird.
Ooh, what a hippa-twit.
Exactly. That's perfect. You know, Newt Gingrich is a hippa-twit. He's a hippa-twit. Let's see if we can get this show back on the straight and narrow and go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra. Oh dear.
No, that conversation was...
Straighten me up.
Special.
I thought so.
No, listen, the Juan Cole bit notwithstanding, no, the whole... the more this goes on, the more disturbing it is. You know, from the fact that Congress wasn't even in session when he decided to do this, the idea that he's going to grab that sort of war-making power. I'm sorry. The more I think about it, the more disturbed I am by the whole enterprise. And I don't know what the F he's going to say tonight. Because, for example, the rebels are about to or got repelled back from Sirte, I guess it's a stronghold of Gaddafi. But, hey, there's a million people there. I mean, are those people all, you know, we're going to bomb, you know, kill those people because they're on Gaddafi's side? I mean, you know, how do you draw the line here?
Well, that's where
there's millions of supporters on his side, too, but just because they may support him now, they're, it's okay to bomb them. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, yeah, I do. And how do you determine what constitutes support?
I mean, it's incredible. I don't understand. Now we're talking about, oh, we're going to have to arm the rebels. Did you realize that some of the rebels are like Al-Qaeda? That's some reports that are coming out. We don't even know who these people are that we're so-called supporting. Some of them are carrying signs with the old ruler of Libya before he was overthrown. But you see what I'm saying? It's like, hello? There was no debate about this before it happened. Even George Bush had an effing debate. And the left is divided again because it's fucking Obama. And I'm just disgusted by the whole thing.
I just feel like my credibility's kind of on the line here. Because if I couldn't support it when George was doing it, I can't support it when Barack's doing it either.
No, I really...
Because in both instances, nobody attacked us.
No, there's that, but the whole, end run around the whole constant, you know, the complete overtaking of the executive branch and turning it into this sort of autonomous actor now is really scaring me. It's like, okay, this bitch can assassinate Americans. He can have them stripped nude without be charging them of anything, or I guess they charged them, but whatever. They were torturing dude beforehand. Habeas corpus is sort of a mystery. Miranda rights have been sort of attacked.
Well, yeah, they got a nice bye-bye in the last couple of weeks.
You need to go on, and it's just like all this is originating out of the executive branch, with Congress wringing their hands. Ooh.
Well, and we can add one to it, Sandra. It comes from out, you know, sort of in your neck of the woods. You know, speaking generally of California, because y'all have that medical marijuana thing going on out there, right?
Yeah.
Well, not so much when the Obama administration Justice Department gets hold of you. So this thing's been going on for 5 years against Dr. Marion Molly Fry and her husband of 25 years, Dale Schaefer.
Oh, yeah, those people, what happened to them?
They're going to prison on May the 2nd for 5 years Fed time.
Yeah, because they've been fighting that for years. Oh, I didn't know that. I hadn't heard that.
And it's not like the Obama administration didn't say, you know what, this is stupid.
That's been going on since the Bush administration.
Right, and you know, there was an opportunity there to say, you know what? This is not worth it. This is just wrong. And instead, no, the Obama administration went forward with it, carried through on it, and a pair of sexagenarians or, you know, 50-somethings, whatever, they're going to prison for 5 years. They've lost everything that they have.
Yeah, no. I remember hearing about them years ago, and I knew they were fighting it because they had a business.
Well, they had a home just north of Sacramento. They got raided in 2001 by the Ashcroft gang. 34 marijuana plants, cannabis plants, were confiscated.
Right.
So, boom, everything goes sideways.
Well, these people aren't young either, right?
No. She's a physician, an MD,
yeah.
And she was treating herself with medical marijuana. He has profound problems, and they used it for his problems as well.
Yeah.
They never charged a dime for any of it. They charged a $10 delivery fee to cover the gas.
Yeah, no, I do remember their, you know, their situation. I didn't, so now they're actually going to go inside. Is that what's going on?
Yeah, party over. Appeal's
incredible.
Done.
Well, this, but it's just kind of, I don't know. I just think people really need to just sort of get it together with their divided loyalties and hand-wringing about all this because, if it was McCain, you know what would the left be doing?
That's the thing. I know, you know, there would, you know, we'd be talking about what a miserable fascist John McCain is for attacking a country that never attacked us.
Well, and we can't let just because it's some sort of Democratic president. I'm sorry, I am not interested in the total disintegration of the checks and balance. I guess it's all becoming real quaint, and that's a worry because you know we'll just devolve into a police state. I don't care if it is fronted by a black man. You see what I'm saying? That's neither here nor there for me. And I'm finding it really disturbing how much this man is taking for granted at this point. It's like, wow, you know.
But
yeah. By the right wing yelling Bertha, Bertha, this and that, I mean, you know, we in a third war, Bob. I'm sorry, I'm like 100 million a day, and they're looking at the government shutdown. I mean, what, you know, hello?
Yeah, these things, they don't add up. And if nothing else, the only thing I got left, you know, because I didn't hit the big Mega Millions, the only thing I got left is a little bit of consistency and what I hope is a little bit of credibility.
Well, I mean, it's just sort of, you know, you can only, and I don't mean to poo-poo, you know, people being brutalized by their leadership. That's a horrible thing. But there's too many other side issues, too, with the whole AFRICOM thing. I'm looking at that thinking, yeah, I don't know. You know, it's a bit suspect.
Well, see, Matt Osborne made a point earlier today in his Morning Awful post defending all of this, in which he said, you know, one of the things that was on the way was this long-range mobile howitzer that was going to blast everything to kingdom come. And at the end, he showed a picture of it being used on Gaza. And Matt said, if it's not okay to use it in Gaza, it's not okay to use it in Libya, talking about this particular weapon. And the first thing that I thought upon reading that was, the problem is, it is okay to use it in Gaza. Because I don't see any no-fly zones over Israel.
Well, and you won't. And the thing is that...
No UN resolutions. We vetoed. The United States vetoed one of those, Sandra.
Non-stop. And every day. All day. Every day. And the thing is that, I don't know, I'm just sort of... I'm really gobsmacked, you know, by this whole use of military right now. I'm like, you know, what's going on, you know?
And I'm totally comfortable talking about all of this way because let's be 100% certain about something else, and that is this: I understand that Repig Lickens are Repig Lickens, and I, you know, they're glowing in the dark with hypocrisy. These right wingers like Don Young from Alaska, who says, "Well, I will certainly won't vote for any funding for this war," but of course he couldn't wait to vote funding for what? Yeah, Iraq. So, you know, I'm comfortable with all of this because, frankly, I oppose war. Especially wars in which we have not been attacked.
No, but I'm not gonna sit here and be supporting this action just because some Republicans aren't supporting. I don't want them to support.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Oh, okay, because I don't, if the Republicans want to not fund it, fine, don't. And I'm not a pacifist per se. That's not, you know, the real issue. But I'm not understanding what the hell is going on with this particular action now, because the arming of people who we don't even know who they are, hello? Apparently the Egyptians are so-called arming people with our blessing. And it's so convoluted.
I seem to recall a period of time in something called the 80s when we armed some people that we really didn't know who they were. And they turned out to be, you know, Afghan terrorists.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And when I say Al-Qaeda, I always have my tongue in my cheek because, you know, I always wonder about the whole construct of that. Especially the Al-Qaeda in the peninsula era. What is that one? The latest one?
Oh, yeah. The that's the Yemeni crowd, isn't it?
Okay, right. And it's just like, huh? Anyway, I'm sort of, you know, I'm more than happy to sort of try to hear what Obama is saying. But as far as I'm concerned, he has, like, expanded exponentially the power of the executives. And you know, I'm stuck there, I'll be honest with you. I can't get past it. As a student of American government, I can't get past it. Hello. Help me.
Right. And... And, I mean, so you read the Juan Cole thing, too.
Yeah, I read it, and I don't disagree with some aspects of it, except for it's real selective and chewing gum. Didn't Rumsfeld say that shit?
Yeah, that's the one that kind of made me go, oh!
You know, and it's just, even if Rumsfeld did say it, I don't know, all of it is just like, people bending over backwards because of, you know, who's doing it. It should not be the issue because there are horrible bombs raining down on some more brown people. That's all I see.
And that's kind of where I am.
And I don't know. The speech up tonight seems to be 2 weeks too late, too. I'm confused on that one.
Well, is this the speech he didn't want to give?
I have no idea, but, you know, limited is already the word for the drinking party, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of like, I don't know.
Well, I don't see the equivalence that Juan Cole makes between this and the Prague Spring. I understand. The Prague Spring was, you know, this beautiful, hopeful uprising in the name of democracy and self-government, and the Soviets brutally put it down with their tanks.
Yeah.
But this is not that. This is not that at all, or it doesn't look like it.
Is Obama going to be linking the other various other changes that are going on in the Mideast with this, or you see what I mean? I mean, what is this? Is this going to be framing our policy going forward?
I would not want to be the guy, Sandra, who is trying to draw a distinction between, say, Assad's Syria and Gaddafi's Libya.
Well, no.
Or Saleh's Yemen.
But, oh, Joe said we need to bomb Syria, too. I said, oh, my God. Did you hear that?
Yeah. he needs to go back. He needs to go back to waxing the Trans Am.
No, but, you know, it's like the war. Anytime there's war, I mean, the excitableness of these people. Everyone is just so excited about this, and it's just horrifying to me what this country has become, because in the meanwhile, the cuts continue. I was a bit pleased by the half a million of my folks in England. Them people ain't joking.
No,
so
that
was interesting.
They got up, got serious, made noise, and I don't know. Camilla and Charles probably wet themselves somewhere.
Yeah. Well, I don't even care if they keep showing the thugs breaking shit. I'm like, so what? You know, the banksters have, like, annihilated that country. So just spare me the, oh, we can't have the people acting up bullshit. No, we beyond that. I don't care. You know what I mean?
We have here footage of them turning over a post box and a telephone.
You know, and it's just kind of like, yeah, and? You know, what they need to be concerned about is why you got a half a million British people, Bob, out in the street. We're not talking about Italians or Portuguese. We're talking about the British, you know? They don't move too fast. So shit is deep there, and I like how they're finally making the connections with these corporations that don't pay taxes. I mean, these are important linkage that are coming together, which, you know, I can't say enough good things about.
But by the same token,
Sandra, I don't know if you did you catch 60 Minutes last night?
Oh no, that's some bullshit. Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay. But the messaging. You know, you're talking about these millions and millions of taxes that aren't being paid, and they're not being paid by people who are apparently what, mailboxes in Zug, Switzerland, right?
Yeah.
And so, naturally, to make sure that she has a balanced story, goes and has a conversation with somebody from Oracle or Cisco or whatever.
Right.
And he says, there are all these jobs, you know, we put them in Ireland because their tax rates are lower. So if we want the jobs to come back to America, we have to have tax rates as low as Ireland. And then all the jobs will come home and we'll have Frisbees and wheat checks and everything will be wonderful.
Oh, have you seen Ireland lately?
Yeah, not so much.
You know, not only that, but think of the source. And I'm sorry to go there because I know I can be called, you know, whatever, but these are multi-million dollar people talking at us on 60 Minutes from their multi-millionaire office suite and corporations talking about other corporations. I can't buy it no more. What they're selling, it ain't credible because of what they are. Viacom?
Right.
GE? Come on.
Yeah, meanwhile, and I don't know if you saw this earlier today, but it was a real dandy. GE, you know, who paid zero taxes last year, Jeffrey Immelt, all of that crap.
Yeah.
GE is demanding wage and benefit concessions from its workers.
Well, yeah, that's the thing. This is the thing, so I can't hear about the job creators. You know, it's just like, no, they want to immiserate us completely. They want us to earn $3 an hour and offshore everything else that they can. And as the, Jack Welch said, he wants corporations on a barge. That is what they want. So I'm not hearing none of it. Not from the Leslie Stahl, not from these other pigs that are on TV.
Yeah, Leslie Stahl, that's it, right.
Right, you know, so it's not even believable. But, see, the fact that they're touching on these things, though, is kind of interesting, though. Obviously, there is some pressure.
Just ignore it anymore.
Right. Because, you know, that PBS thing that I sent you?
Yeah.
That was absolutely fascinating. Because they actually, you know, made a comment that just blew me away with the 1 in 3 jobs in this country now are protective jobs, security jobs of some type. And I just think that is so, that's an important point to make. It's like, oh, yeah, right. All our jobs now have to be protecting these motherfuckers' private property, right?
Yeah, right.
Why is that?
And the answer is because otherwise the jobs would be, well, like this GE story. They got 15,000 workers who are members of 14 unions.
Yeah.
And they're going to be they're being called upon since they're negotiating the new master contract. GE wants them to eliminate a defined contribution benefit pension for new employees. No more pensions.
That means nothing because the 401, we know, we've had enough decades of that madness to see how they perform horribly. Okay, yeah.
They want to eliminate current health insurance plans in favor of health savings accounts.
Unbelievable. That doesn't even make no sense. Who's going to agree to that?
Well, see, the thing is, here's the fun part. They've already done it in both of those instances that I just mentioned. Sandra, they've already done it to their non-salaried, their non-union salaried employees.
Okay, yeah. Okay, well, see, it's just, this is feudalism. I'm sorry, you know, it's really unbelievable. But in the meantime, we still have to have the corporate media trying to run a game on us that somehow this is justifiable and okay. Trust me, you cannot have a democracy with this sort of economic...
And yet the president felt compelled to come out and defend Jeffrey Immelt yet again.
Oh, that's interesting. See, I missed that. Okay. Yeah, because the pressure. You know, because it stinks, Bob, to the high heaven.
Yeah.
That's why he's coming out then. That's interesting. See, yeah, no, you cannot run a so-called democracy and have the kind of stuff that's going down happening. For example, I don't know if you talked about this, but we don't want poor people to have any money at all?
Yeah, no, I haven't.
Oh, shit. Hello? That one's really doing my head in, too, because the implications are just so frightening. A, they issue everything on these J.P. Morgan cards.
Right.
First of all, so they get a little taste. And now they want to be able to control. I mean, how are they gonna police this? This is my question. $20 cash over the month, or what?
Or nothing.
They cut you off, but how is it verified? You see what I mean? I mean, the whole thing is just so. It is just not democratic. I don't know what this is.
Well, you're gonna love this. Jay Carney, of course, is the White House press secretary now. And he was asked about Jeffrey Immelt.
Oh, okay, yeah, I got it here. It is.
Yeah, this was the quote. Americans, I'm sure, who read that story and heard about it, are wondering how this could be. And one of the reasons why it could be is part of the problem of the corporate tax structure. Yeah, that's a little sobering, isn't it? So maybe if we do go all Ireland and reduce the corporate tax structure to nil, they'll just come right home.
Okay, so this is that's how they respond. Well, this is an opportunity to lower it further? That's their response?
Well, no, they haven't said that, but that's
But that's what it says.
That's how that reads to me.
No, incredible. I mean, I don't know, you know, it's sort of, because, see, neoliberalism don't work. We can look at South America and, you know, Egypt to a certain extent. And in England, they're trying, you know that they lost ground on their growth last quarter. They were like all shocked. And it don't work. It's the road to serfdom. And they're going to try that here because I think that they're going to try to pull the, I don't know if they're going to cut Social Security directly. Or try to raise the age. I just don't. I'm not feeling very good about.
Oh no, there's always
shut down.
There's always somebody out there willing to do it. Mike Lux over at Crooks and Liars had a post earlier this afternoon called "Destroying the Democratic Party to Save It." So it includes a clip from Ryan McConaughey, who is of that third way group. And the way they captioned it at Crooks and Liars is, Third Way's Ryan McConaughey explains why middle class will have to accept cuts in Social Security benefits. That's still where, we're going to, I mean, can you just imagine this, Sandra? Can you imagine this as an actual functioning reality in 2011, 2012, going into a campaign season? That the idea is that we need to lower corporate taxes and cut Social Security benefits to make America get all well and better.
Right, no, it's incredible. The thing is, though, the economy next year, I mean, the indicators are really not looking that great. So I'm not too sure what the hell Obama thinks he's going to be running on. Now, because I think the Republican field is so absolutely horrendous, I don't know who's going to pop up. They're all so awful, notwithstanding Haley Barbour actually admitting that slavery, yes, it was, the reason for the Civil War. That's not enough, bitch.
But you don't know what that means. And well, yeah, you do. But when you're white and Haley and you get around to saying that in Mississippi, I mean,
head-turning, but anyway, go ahead, what were you going to say?
No, that's the thing. That's head-turning in Mississippi. That's head-spinning. Wait, what?
I was like...
The noble cause was about slavery? Oh, get me the smelling salts.
Yeah, no. So that's definitely, that pig is trying hard. Okay?
Wait, but you're gonna love this. This is one of the lines from the Third Way people. Their argument for why the Democratic Party and the progressive movement should take the lead on entitlement reform.
Incredible.
Yeah. Let's see. We also have recommendations for how to sell reform most effectively. You know, like selling a Ford Pinto, I guess. Yeah, so what if it blows up on contact? Let's see. You're going to love this line. You're just going to love this line. Voters are extremely deficit sensitive and are likely to remain so. The party seen as most serious on the issue will win the day. Voters' views on Medicare, Social Security, etc., are more nuanced than Washington often gives them credit for. Horse feathers!
They're not nuanced. People don't want anything cut from Social Security or everyone.
Right, because you know what? It's hard to be nuanced about food.
Not only that, but it's hard to be nuanced when you have someone in your family, like everybody in a 90 percentile of this country has someone touched by government programs. And if they do this shutdown, you know, we'll see it in action. I mean, that's just going to be a mess. I don't know what's going on, but they keep throwing out feelers like, oh, this is going to be a reality. There's going to be a high price to pay for that bullshit.
Well, but that, you know, but the third way goobers just don't hear it. You got to love this. On messaging, we strongly suggest ditching the pain and shared sacrifice narrative because it vastly overstates the incremental measures that need to occur. Rather, we recommend a security and growth frame.
Oh, my God.
Doesn't that just make you want to vomit?
Well, it's just, yeah, I mean, all I can say is just sort of these plutocrats that are in control now, and, you know, they're going to finish off the New Deal, you know, with the big help of the Obama administration. All I can say, you know, people need to wake the hell up. They need to wake up. I'm well past it. I just think that I don't know what it's going to be short of, but the idea that we can start yet more military action somewhere in the world is really stunning. It's absolutely stunning. But the plutonium now, hello? That situation is also freaking me out a little bit. It's like, I keep...
Well, no, I mean, I think we have to come to grips with something where Japan is concerned. It's going to be a long time before there's any good news out of Japan.
No, I understand, but what I'm sick of hearing, though, is there's plutonium now, oh, but it's not going to hurt anything. You know, everything is followed up by that.
Right, it's the nice plutonium.
What? And, oh, it's in the seawater, but it's not going to affect the life in the sea. What? Oh, and the Pacific Ocean is the largest ocean in the world. So what? Everything, you know what I mean? It's just like, I don't know. I'm just, you know, it's really scary. Because it seems like a good portion of that country could become not fit for people to live. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm exaggerating. I mean, it sounds bad.
No, I think the word we're looking for is part of that country may become toxic.
Okay, but
yeah,
but all the they can't seem to explain why there's so much radiation in the water. I don't mean to laugh.
Well, no, I think they know the answer, but they don't dare give it because of the same people. Because the reason, the reason there's so much radiation in the water is the same people who want to, you know, it's the global corporate elite. You know, I hate to sound all Alex Jonesy or anything, but it really, really is.
Well, no, but my favorite is just looking at the various headlines with the sort of spread of this radiation. This one says, radioactive material detected in air of 3 southern U.S. states.
But it's okay.
But of course, it's okay. Iodine 131.
Yeah, you know, there's no more radiation there than you'd get on a regular day at the beach.
Oh, my God. And it's just kind of like, hello? Anyway, I don't know. I don't really, you know, I'm on my spring break from virtual library Odyssey world, so
you're out of the cloud for a few days.
Yes, I'm taking 2 days off. I have a lot of reading to do, but you know what, Bob? I'm about to go and just dive into virtual library world because I can't take it. I can't take any more of it. I'm like, let me figure out some control vocabulary and whatever, because I don't know what to do.
Me either. And
I have to disappear, man.
Well, and I just got the link up of President Not Sure sitting there talking earnestly to a room full of people. So I guess we'll maybe give him a listen real quick.
Oh, okay. Listen, yeah, I'll hang up and let you do that, and you know, try to engage. So.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, listen. Also, I'm upset about the Joe Badgett. You know, it's not like I'm terribly surprised, but nevertheless, it's you know, it's horrible.
Well, damned if it doesn't hurt losing him. I mean, and it seems like there's never a right time or a good time, but what a rotten time to lose him.
Oh, God, no, and it's just, yeah, I don't know, you know, best out to his family for sure, because I know he had kids, right?
Yeah, he's got three kids, and I saw in an article where he once referred to them as all good lefties. So apparently, you know, they were well-raised.
Yeah, well, anyway, yeah, that is sort of sad. I don't know, you know. I mean, the best thing we can do is to buy his last work, I would suggest, if people can.
Yep.
And the other thing I wanted to mention right quick was that Jeff Bigger article. Hello? Oh, my God.
Oh, wait, you mean the multi-billion-dollar sellout in Wyoming?
And I could have done without that picture of Warren Buffett receiving some medal from President Not Sure. I mean, the dude is so deep in it. You know, it's...
Yeah, and for those who might... Yeah. The United States, under the Obama administration, just announced that they're going to greenlight the mining of an estimated 750 million to 2.4 billion tons of coal on our land, otherwise known as public lands, in the Powder River Basin of Wyoming. And it's a nightmare, you know. And the funny thing is, Ken Salazar came out and, you know, oh, we're going to be up to our ass in money. Oh, money, money, everywhere money. Oh, this is going to be so good for America. Well, he was literally multiplying the best top-end value by 10.
Listen, how is the Warren Buffetts and the Jamie Dimons, how are they any different from these, you know, plutocrats in the Gilded Age? What is the difference?
To me, there is none.
I mean, seriously. When I was, like, reading the holdings that just that man had in the scheme of that article, I was like, damn, you know, this ain't right.
Yeah, he owns Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad.
Right, the railroad. I'm thinking,
so he carries all of the coal out of the Powder River Basin of Wyoming?
All right, and the projections on the profits behind this government action, no big government, we don't need government. Yeah, right. Hello? I mean, these people make money off the actions of government. I'm so sick of hearing about a free market, because, I mean, that whole article was just a litany of how it's not a free market and how it's all about what politician you have in your back pocket.
Oh, and this, you know, this timeline, it was just sickening, wasn't it?
That was crazy.
November 10th, Bill Gates and Warren Buffett visit Arch Coal's mine in Wyoming, and Buffett hails the trip as fascinating. December 10th, 1 month later, Wall Street is already certain that Buffett will continue this gamble on coal. December 14th, Gates and Buffett meet with President Obama at the White House to discuss the economy. January 6th, Wall Street analysts now say Buffett is going big on coal. February 15th, President Obama awards Buffett the Medal of Freedom at the White House. February 26th, in Buffett's annual Berkshire Hathaway shareholder letter, he reminds all listeners that his coal-transporting railroads, nearly 300 million tons of coal a year, will increase Berkshire's normal earning power by nearly 40% pre-tax and by well over 30% after-tax. Then, finally, March 23rd, citing the nuclear tragedy in Japan, and if that doesn't just make me want to put my fist through a wall and world energy needs, Interior Secretary Ken Salazar opens 750 million to 2.4 billion tons of coal on public lands in Wyoming only days after EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson cracks down on coal-fired plants.
Yeah.
God almighty.
Yeah, no, it's just incredible. That story was incredible, especially when he linked the horrific disaster in Japan. It's like, what in the fuck? Yeah, no way. That was just, I mean, it's just horrific, because back to this Japanese thing for a quick moment, is that that tragedy is just going to keep unfolding. This is a thing, like coal, but on steroids. You know, the radiation is just spreading and spreading and spreading. And we're being prepared to have to deal with this, right?
Yeah, we're basically being, yes. And, you know, David in Tennessee just wrote in, Sandra, and he said, it's really simple. We've heard for weeks now that Tokyo Power was, quote, using seawater to cool the reactor and all of that stuff, remember?
Mm.
And he says, well, once the water was hot with the temperature, it had to be replaced with cooler water, right? Well, the hot water had to go someplace else to make room for the cooler water, so the hot water went back into the ocean carrying the radioactivity with it.
Right. Hence,
oh, my.
We were shocked that it's in the water, right?
Right. I'm shocked to find out there's gambling going on here.
Right. Anyway, and the coal thing is like, I mean, how many thousands of people die a year in this country behind the coal? Isn't it like 10,000 from like respiratory problems every year in this country or something?
26,000.
Okay, I knew it was something real crazy.
Yeah, and die.
And it's just like, and then now we're going to get the sort of permanent radioactive cloud going from corner to corner? I mean, how are they going
I don't think that's what our bettors meant when they were advertising the cloud. That wasn't funny. No, that wasn't funny on my part. But this is that new reality that we've been talking about for a year now. This world of diminished expectations and the creeping grim death. You know,
and the permanent polluted the environment, I guess, because listen, this the sort of slowly emptying of these six reactors into the environment is like, I'm sorry, that's like world stopping as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
You know, and I understand it's, you know, the silent this or that, but wow. Are they going to put cement over it? I mean, what is the plan?
Well, eventually, yeah, it's going to be cement and sand, if what I read is correct.
And how long are these four people supposed to be doing these suicide missions, though?
Well, how long are these poor people who... No, they, you know, beyond, not to discount their sacrifice, but beyond them, Sandra, there are, what, a million people, maybe? Hundreds of thousands who cannot go back and live there ever?
Yeah. But, okay, so, but there is a possibility that if the radiation continues, that they it will overwhelm the ability of
yes.
humans to actually function in that plant, though, right? Isn't that...
Absolutely. I heard one guy on the tube saying that, they said, well, what, you know, realistically do you think will happen? And he said, what do I realistically think will happen? Well, here's what I think is going to happen. I hope it doesn't, but all I've got at this point is hope. He said, there's going to be at least two reactors that completely melt down. And I just sat there and went, well, that's a little more reality than we've been getting.
Well, and what does that mean, though? That means...
Well, he used the phrase China syndrome. You know, core on the floor, big glowing pile of radioactive hell that's going to be that way for the foreseeable future of humankind.
Okay, so just sort of, I can't even, see, the reason why I'm just stammering, because I can't even wrap my head around it, and I guess most other people can't either, because they're still looking for Charlie Sheen or whatnot. It's very hard to sort of, you know, this has been the first time for March Madness that I really have, I can't get with it. I don't know.
No, not even with Virginia Commonwealth doing to Kansas what they did.
Yeah, well, it's just been
and
hard.
Butler.
Yeah, it's kind of been kind of hard to get, you know, I don't know. So, anyway, and there is so much. The other thing I want to have to quickly mention is the Governor Cuomo. It's like, are you kidding me? There's a surcharge on the rich. This fool is rescinding it in order to slash health care and education. not even putting a tax on him. He could have just left what's already in.
Yeah, he didn't have to do anything. I read that story.
I'm just like, what is going on?
What is the justification?
I mean, how in the world are you explaining to your constituents who have to vote for your dumbass that we are going to give tax breaks to the rich and cut your services?
I think they've really bought into the notion that, that cutting taxes creates wealth.
Yeah, it creates wealth for the rich.
Yeah, but I know. But then again, I go back to what I said about 60 Minutes last night. There's Leslie Stahl talking to this guy from Cisco or Oracle or where the hell ever, who is, and she's not looking at him like, you know, he belongs in a booby hatch when he says that if you'll just cut corporate taxes to zero, everything will be shiny and sparkly again. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
There's no challenge to it. It's conventional wisdom. It's received teaching now. That's how far it's gotten in. You know, that's how far it's burrowed under our collective hide.
Well, you know, don't forget Obama's speech from the State of the Union with the, what is it? We got to win the future.
Yeah.
Well, no, we need now. Okay, we need to win now. That's the thing about that whole slogan. It's like, what are you talking about the future for?
And now apparently we're going to win the future by bombing it.
Oh God! Wait a minute. Listen, I'll let you go.
Oh, but well, one last thing before you go. William, writing in from Cleveland, says Case Western Reserve is talking about some radiation and rainwater on some of their roofs.
Oh hell! Yeah, well, you know,
Cleveland.
I realize I've been yelling the whole time, but I'm just, like, freaking out, you know, as per usual. But anyway, Bob, listen, have a good evening.
All right, you take care, Sandra. Bye now.
Bye.
You know, it's hard not to. It's hard not to just have a, you know, a straight-up hissy watching some of this stuff. Oh, God, let's check in and see what President Not Sure is saying.
Brighter. If more of mankind can live with the bright light of freedom and dignity. Tonight, let us give thanks for the Americans who are serving through these trying times and the coalition that is carrying our effort forward. Let us look to the future with confidence and hope, not only for our own country, but for all those yearning for freedom around the world. Thank you. God bless you. And may God bless the United States of America. Thank you.
Ah, geez, I only got there in time to let him to hear him say the God bless Cordite part. But it always ends that way, doesn't it? And let's remember those who are serving so that if you criticize what I've decided to do, we can tell you that you hate the troops. You know, I didn't like it from a Republican, and I don't like it twice as much from a Democrat. There I go again, right? Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
I'd like to open up with a amusing quote.
Okie doke.
From a book. The Great Ventilation and Telephone Riots, SRDT 35454, had started out as just as a lot of hot air. Hot air, of course, was the problem ventilation was supposed to solve, and generally had solved the problem reasonably well up until the point someone invented air conditioning, which had solved the problem far more throbbingly. And that was all well and good, provided you could stand the noise and the dribbling, until someone came up with something even sexier and smarter than air conditioning, which was called in-building climate control. Now, this was quite something. The major difference from ordinary air conditioning was that it was thrillingly more expensive and involved a huge amount of sophisticated measuring and regulating equipment, which was far better at knowing moment by moment what sort of air people wanted to breathe than mere people did. It also meant that, to be sure, people didn't muck up the sophisticated calculations that the system was making on their behalf. All the windows in the building were built sealed shut. This is true. While the systems were being installed, a number of people who were going to work in the buildings found themselves having conversations with BreatheSmart system filters that went something like this. But what if we want to have the windows open? You won't want to have the windows open with the new BreatheSmart. Yes. But suppose we wanted to have them open for just a little bit. You won't want to have them open, even for a little bit. The new BreatheSmart system will see to that. Enjoy BreatheSmart. Okay, so what if the BreathaSmart breaks down or goes wrong or something? Ah, but one of the smartest features of the BreathaSmart is that it cannot possibly go wrong. So no worries on that score. Enjoy your breathing and go about your day. It was, of course, and a result of the great ventilation and telephone riots, SRD-3554, that all mechanical or electrical or quantum mechanical or hydraulic or even wind steam or piston-driven devices are now required to have a certain legend emblazoned on them somewhere. It doesn't matter how small the object is. The designers of the object have to find a way of squeezing the legend in somewhere because it is their attention that is being drawn to it rather than the users. The legend is this. The major difference between a thing that might go wrong and a thing that cannot possibly go wrong is that when a thing that cannot possibly go wrong goes wrong, it usually turns out to be impossible to get at or repair.
Wow. And as such...
Douglas Adams.
Yes. I was thinking either that or Brazil.
Yeah. But, you know, the problem is, and this is the problem for people who are with... interventionists and any of the situations we find ourselves in that are suddenly I don't know what you call it, trendy to hop on the bandwagon because a president who you don't know, by the way, people, you don't know any of these figures. That's important. You can't speak to them directly. You only have an image of hope. You have this illusion in mind. You know what it's like, Bob? It's like finding out one of your favorite rock stars is an asshole. You're like, that can't be true. I have all those fucking records. That's what it's like. And if that annoys people, I mean, I'm here to tell you this. Listen to me right now. None of you know Obama. None of you. Not me, not you, not anyone. Not anyone listening knows this man. And because you criticize him, here's the point. Because we criticize him, doesn't mean we hate him. It's this fact alone.
Right.
We know that these things are happening in increments. The same thing that's happening in Maine, Bob, is happening in West Virginia. Same thing that's happening in West Virginia is the same thing that's happening in goddamn California. It's happening all over. There is no 11-dimensional chess. And even if there was, the fucking board is rigged, you dumbasses.
Now, tell us how you really feel, David.
No, but I mean...
I understand. I understand completely. You know, and I don't know, maybe NASCAR culture has got, you know, which before that was pro-wrestling culture, which before that was roller derby culture. Maybe it's gotten too far into the American bloodstream, David, so that, you know, we equate somehow our sense of personal worth... You know, I don't hate Barack Obama. There's not many people on this planet I do hate. I mean, there's some and stuff, but we're not going to take time to list them. I don't hate him, but I am incredibly disappointed, and I disagree with him. And here's the fun part. It's okay to disagree with him.
You know, Bob, if we want to go on an intervention world tour, why don't we just fire up the jet that Bruce Dickinson has, and we'll all board up, and we'll all go on an intervention world tour with Iron Maiden, and you can't possibly lose with that mascot Eddie. That would scare all of the opposite.
Yeah, just drop Eddie somewhere in Syria, and watch watch Assad have a baby.
And by the way, the reason why I've gotten into this type of shift today is because I read, I'm sure you know of it already. I don't know if you've seen the pictures, but the bastard. The governor bastard, actually, he removed it on the weekend quietly and secretly. And I had a conversation with someone at the post office who didn't even know what the mural was about. And I broke it down and explained it. And basically, it just came to this. I said, it's a goddamn mural in a conference room that nobody knew existed in the first place. How can you not see this, that this was playing politics to the extreme?
And you got what, funny looks?
I mean, they said, well, I didn't really pay attention to what the mural, I didn't really see the mural. And I was like, oh, sweet Jesus. And that's when I realized that, you know, everyone is...
Is that when this person informed you that that he or she was keeping up with the Zsa Zsa Gabor suicide watch?
No, I mean, they were... The person I was talking to, she ran like... she runs... Which is... Jesus Christ. I mean, it's so sad. When you look up on the fact that she owns or runs or owns a pair of U.S. post offices, So you're I'm thinking, I'm like, this person has to have some kind of sentiment when I explain to them they took a mural down that nobody really cared about in the first place, and they got away with it. They removed it this weekend. I'm sure the artist, you know, that's the other thing.
Where'd it go?
Yeah, I'm sure. But, you know, if I was that artist, I would be pushing. This mural should be in the home of every single progressive and liberal. It's become lionized. I mean, when you
but this was, so this was a postmistress?
No, post office.
No, but I mean, she runs a, I mean, okay.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. See, I was stuck in the Newt Gingrich thing.
No, don't stop it. you're hopeless.
Yeah. I mean,
but okay, did she miss the story about how the Republicans are going to close down a boatload of United States post offices?
Can I tell you something? This is the thing that people have to understand, and I want people to understand this because it really is the sign of our times. Government workers, the focus on government and the focus on civil rights and the focus on labor, for some reason, the Republicans and the conservatives, probably because the inundation of media, they've persuaded a group or faction of people into maybe because they have this confident swagger to them and this perception of it, and a lot of the Democrats don't. I don't know how to explain it, Bob, but I'll say this: a lot of people right now in government are being swayed more to the Republican side and the conservative side because of the media they're paying attention to, or the media that they're not paying, or maybe more because of the media they're not paying attention to. And I think the dosage is so high this time that you know, the news today, there are just all signs in the water. There are news that I'll just read this. The Supreme Court conservative justices signaled during oral arguments that they will vote to strike down another campaign funding law. This is for the Arizona campaign financing law. And make clear that states and cities may not try to level the playing field between candidates for public office. And let me just translate that for people who just heard that. That means no 11-dimensional chess and the game is over. Okay?
Yeah, the board's been put away.
I mean, this is just ridiculous, and this is the problem. This is why we can't. If we can never have these discussions, that should in the public, in the open, and if the only place we can have it is on the horn, which I respect gratefully. But there is a problem with the fact that we can't have these conversations in public.
No,
on public airways.
Yeah, without a doubt.
And you know, we look at the thing with the situation in Libya. Yeah, I was reading up on a lot of what it has to do with CEOs and the CEOs in West Virginia and stuff, and I found a site, Bob, I don't know if you're aware of it. It's called Glassdoor. Have you heard of it?
No.
Well, it's pretty cool. Well, it's cool for the function it has. What it is you can go to a company's site, and you can actually see the CEO in charge, and you're able to review the CEO and the company.
Nice.
So I was looking at there's a lot of companies in West Virginia for coal, and Massey, I think, got like a 2.5
out of 5 or out of 10.
yeah.
Oh, Jesus.
Some of the comments were just ridiculous. But Massey, that gives you free lunches.
And free doctoring, yeah. By the way, I have to share this with you with the mention of the radiation and stuff.
Yeah.
Just heard from another David in South Carolina.
Yeah.
Just sent me a headline from thestate.com, which is the newspaper down there. Radiation from Japan detected in South Carolina. Trace levels pose no risk to residents.
Of course it doesn't.
Isn't that the Douglas Adams you were just reading?
Yeah, that's where we're at. The Breida Smart.
Yeah. Iodine-131 was detected in York and Darlington counties by sensitive equipment at nuclear power plants operated by the Duke and Progress Energy Companies. Okay, so blah, 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 blah. And in the case of Progress, iodine-131 could not have come from the company's plant near Hartsville because it would have been accompanied by other radioactive materials, he said. In this case, only radioactive iodine has shown up. If there were leaks at our existing plants, we would be seeing other radioactive elements as well, and I'd be glowing in the freaking dark, Elliot said. Now, I added the part about glowing in the dark. But I love the sort of just throwaway line here at the end. This is not unexpected, given the sensitivity of our equipment and its ability to detect radiation in the air at extremely low levels. So it's only because their detectors are so good.
You know, Sam Cedar had a has an on-the-ground type of journalist there that he just happened to contact him, who's in Japan right now. And one of the things that he said is one of the stories on the news regarding one of the parts in Japan that he was in was that the government or the officials at the time told the public. Now imagine having family members that follow this advice. They said head for the hills. You're up to your armpits in Martians when they heard news of the tsunami. So he tells the story of a relative driving up and seeing one of his nieces, and he says to her, he says, "Where are you headed?" And he says, "Well, I'm going up to the hill because that's where we were instructed to go to for high ground where we'll be safe." And when the tsunami hit, it totally decimated that hill, and all of the farmers. It was a weird, eerie story where he said like. All of the farmers went. It's like a virtual ghost town over there because they all went to the hill.
Oh God.
And you know, I mean, this is the problem. I mean, this is the other problem I have with the whole. I don't know what I would call it. I would call it kind of like ADD humanitarianism, where we pay attention to Japan and when we talk about Libya, and then you know they issue these press releases. Not going to get involved in Yemen. Not going to get involved in Saudi Arabia.
Syria, Bahrain. Sorry, yeah. No.
And then you just look. And
we've got warships sitting in Bahrain who could just turn around and just bomb the snot out of them, you know. But
I know, but this goes back to my point, people. Sometimes that rock star on your shelf that you idolize, he's really just a dick.
Yeah, you know what I thought about when you first mentioned that.
Yeah.
I immediately flashed on what's her name? The comedian who told the story about I won't say who that was, but let's just put it this way, I'm not still believing.
Yeah.
The female comedian. Apparently Steve Perry walked up and said, "I just love your comedy," and tells one of his buddies, "She's got the best N-word jokes." And she was just aghast. And she said, "Well, it wouldn't be right for me to say who it was, but let's just put it this way, I'm not still believing." And so, yeah, sometimes that rock star who's all, you bought them all, you've got the whole, and he's just a jerk.
Just a jerk. And I'm not saying, again, I'm not saying Obama's a jerk, but I'm saying putting all your cards on somebody that you don't know, that you've never had a conversation with, that you don't have any personal experience outside of just a political meet and greet, it's not the right thing to do, people.
Well, that's like our buddy.
You have to have that critical lens to you. You just have to, because if you don't, you're just going to screw yourself. And in the end, you're just going to break your heart. Don't do it.
Our buddy Andy just wrote in, and he says, "I truly hate Obama. I hate him. Really, I do. He's killing working people, but like the warmongering of Winston Churchill and that of Teddy Roosevelt, sometimes their actions in the net are for the good and the benefit of many good freedom-loving people. Tell David, Governor LePage is a true devil. A true devil. He really represents a ruthless and savage society where working people aren't worth a dime, nor is anyone else not of the privileged elite."
But how can that be? He has an adopted black son.
And he doesn't throw rocks at French Canadians anymore.
And with that, I have to go purchase a Breathe Smart filter system.
Well, you know, let me know if you find a bargain, because I know you're a bargain hunter.
I'm a bargain hunter for real. Oh, and this I meant to mention this other story to you, but I'll mention it to you on prayer meeting Wednesdays. And when I tell you, you're just gonna say no when I mention what it's about concerning Steely Dan.
Yeah, you teased me with this Friday night.
Yeah, I know. I'm gonna call in Wednesday and talk about it. You won't believe it, Bob. You just won't fucking believe it.
All right, that's two now.
I know, it is two teases. But as always, it is great talking to you.
Oh, it's a pleasure, David. Take care.
All right, later.
Bye now. Let's see. 14 passed. Let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, this is Joe.
Hey, what's up?
Good show.
Thank you.
But wanted to say, I thought a couple months ago about something Ralph Nader had said. I think he said, might have said it on Meet the Press when asked about the president. He basically said, he's a con man. I have no use for him. And I'm not terribly certain, you know, going back to your conversation with Sandra, that the ruling classes in this country probably could do just as well with the second Obama term.
Well, that's kind of what I've been saying all along. That's why you're seeing these clowns jump out of the circus clown car on the Republican side of the aisle. Quite frankly, they don't. The real ruling class elite, as our good departed friend Joe Bajent defined it, you know, they don't. No, they don't. They're doing fine with Obama. And there's all this blue smoke and mirrors out there about how, well, you know, he's not really friendly to business, and he doesn't understand small business, and he's a Muslim, and blah, 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 blah. And that's just to keep the 20% that wear house helmets and drool oatmeal. That's just to keep them happy.
Yeah. And I found it interesting, too, after the November election, that prior to that, you know, Sarah Palin was so supposedly so good and strong for the Republican Party in so many of these House races and so many of these governorships. The day after, Spencer Baucus, the Alabama Republican that wants to be chairman of the House Finance, says that she essentially cost him the Senate. Then Michelle Bachmann, who'd raised him about $20 million, they turned on her pretty quickly as well. So, and I guess probably, I think the thinking there is that the deficit reduction, this American austerity is probably too important to be left to the imbeciles. So you get this push by these Tim Ryans of the world, who are far, far more dangerous than any of those people.
Well, they absolutely are, and especially, Joe, because for some reason, and I don't know where this trope got legs, but Tim Ryan is treated as if he is intelligent. Now, here's a guy who admits that he got through college riding the system, but now he wants to kill the system so nobody else can ride too. And he's treated as some sort of intellectual when all he's doing is repeating the same old BS, tired, worn out the talking points, you know, from the Birchers and the K Street thugs. But you know, the for-profit media talks to him and says, listens to him. Oh, listen, he's a serious economic mind. See, I'm old enough to remember when they said that about Newt Gingrich too, and that was no more true than this is.
True. Well, I'll give you one last thing about hate, and then I'll drop off because I mean you've got other callers. But I'm sure you're familiar with the left-wing muckraker Alexander Coburn.
Yeah.
Who had taken on, I forget which paper he was at, but he had taken on Ed Miliband, who's the current labor leader in Britain, whose father was Ralph Miliband, very prominent Marxist. And he wrote about Miliband a couple weeks ago saying, well, I took this fresh-faced young intern to lunch, and I asked him, I said, who do you hate? And Miliband gives him the standard pat answer, well, I don't hate anyone. We just all have disagreements, to which Coburn knew at that point he was already a climber. So,
well, sometimes, you know, sometimes they do sort of betray themselves. By the way, Jim says hi.
Oh, okay.
He says, hey, that's my buddy Joe. Go, Joe.
Anyway, great show. Enjoy it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very kindly. You know, tell your friends and neighbors, and hope we'll hear from you again soon.
Hey, I'll get you some listeners.
All right, great. Bye now.
Bye.
Joe calling from here in the wilds of wonderful, almost level West Virginia. Okay, and hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, what's up, Cossack?
How you doing?
Hanging in there. A bummer of a day for you and me both, because I know that you were a big follower of Joe Bajent as well.
Yeah, a friend of mine. Happy to say, but unfortunately, I was taken by surprise.
I guess I was too. But by the same token, you know, when the news was broken, it was pretty clear that there was no good end to this. It seemed rather quick.
Yeah. Oh, God.
And I spent all day trying to find, and shame on me, I got to do some revamping, Cossack. We got to get some sort of notation up on the archives for what happens when, because I could not. I wanted to play excerpts of Joe from our conversation years and years ago. Couldn't find it. It's lost. It's in the wild. It's there in the archives. Just don't know where.
You got to have some kind of index.
Well, we narrowed it down to probably spring into summer of July of 2007.
I think it's about right.
But that's as far as we could get, and that's, you know, that's 70 shows to listen to.
Yeah. It'll take you a while.
A little bit.
But, I was going to chime in with my two cents worth on the radiation problem. You know that I work for NCRP, right?
Right.
So, I know something about radiation, you would imagine. And this is one thing that they don't bother telling you, is radiation is cumulative. Yes, it may not be enough to kill you on the spot. Fine. Great. But what kind of exposure are you accumulating? You know.
Well, exactly. And there are things to be taken into account with radiation. For instance, a troubling little study that has sort of stayed in the back of my mind, Cossack, that came out some several months ago. I think it was even before the bad weather set in, so it's probably 6 months ago. But it was a story about a release of a real live, honest to Jesus study that was done of CT scan machines.
Right.
And what they found out is that there is little to no actual calibration from machine to machine to machine.
Correct.
And as such, getting a CT scan can result in as much as 25,000 times the appropriate amount. I think that was the number. It just stuck in my head.
Right.
The appropriate amount of radiation one needs in order to have a CT scan. And the people who were interviewed about this thing, you know, they didn't, you know, they certainly weren't Alex Jones types. And they weren't, you know, they their hair wasn't on fire, but they just calmly said that in about 20 to 25 years time, there's going to be a massive eruption of cancer in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Directly related to, you know, those poorly calibrated machines. So when we talk about the cumulative effects of radiation, let's remember it's not just what's coming from the Fukushima right now. It's what Fukushima is landing on top of.
Correct. And the problem of it is I know for a fact, I mean, besides my little dealing with the reactor, we were all exposed, my generation as kids, from the open nuke tests in Nevada. You know, they really didn't tell you that much about the fallout clouds and everything. As a matter of fact, if you remember, people were having A-bomb parties where they'd all go out there and watch the bombs go off. Not very many of those people around anymore.
No.
But, you know, we all got irradiated to some degree until they stopped the above-ground tests. And, you know, they say, well, only 50 or 60 people died at Chernobyl. You heard the study that came out recently, right?
Yeah.
It's actually closer to 1 million. Attributable to Chernobyl.
and what will the numbers be like out of Japan?
That's a good question, because some of the more knowledgeable radiation people are saying, A, yes, the core is breached. You've got plutonium outside of the reactor complex. Not just the stuff they flushed into the sea. It's actually in the soil outside of the complex. What does this tell you? It tells me the core is breached.
If it's plutonium, and yeah, that kind of has to, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, either that or it's the used NOx fuel in 3. But either way, plutonium is burning. And plutonium is pyrophoric. It will burn on its own, given the right conditions.
Kind of like sulfur.
Yeah.
That's why they pack it in oil. It touches air, it catches fire.
Yeah. And
pyrophoric. There's our new word for tonight.
But, yeah, it amazes me, it kind of does, that people are blowing this off. Well, it's only 10,000 times the normal radiation level. Yeah, for how long? 10,000 times for how long a period?
Well, what's the half-life?
That, too. And, I mean, you've got to figure those 50 heroes at Fukushima, they really are. They are essentially kamikazes. They are not coming out of this alive. I guarantee it to you.
Well, you know, Mike Whitney, Sandra just sent me a link from over at Counterpunch.
Uh-huh.
Which, you know, Joe just mentioned. An article by Mike Whitney called "Is Fukushima About to Blow?"
Right.
And it seems to be something similar to the same sort of thing that I saw that one particular expert, whomever he was, you know, he was an expert from, you know, a place that, well, has experts. And he wasn't talking, there was no happy talk. And he writes, conditions at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear plant are deteriorating. The doomsday scenario is beginning to unfold. On Sunday, Tokyo Electric Power Company officials reported that the levels of radiation leaking into seawater at the Unit No. 2 reactor were 100,000 times above normal, and the airborne radiation measured 4 times higher than government limits. As a result, emergency workers were evacuated from the plant and rushed to a safe location. The prospect of a full core meltdown or an environmental catastrophe of incalculable magnitude now looms larger than ever. The crisis is getting worse.
Correct.
And he talks about if what you were talking about, if the spent fuel rods catch fire, then the heat will lift radiation plumes high into the atmosphere, and they will travel rather easily around the planet at that point.
Mm-hmm. The entire northern hemisphere.
The Central Institute for Meteorology and Geodynamics in Vienna, Austria, says that the process has already begun. They're seeing, Japan's damaged nuclear plant in Fukushima has been emitting radioactive iodine and cesium at levels approaching those seen in the aftermath of Chernobyl.
Yep.
Iodine-131 being released at daily levels 73% of those seen after Chernobyl. 73%. Right now.
Yeah. I think we are definitely moving into Chernobyl territory. And Chernobyl.
Well, what scares me is that we may not be moving into Chernobyl territory. We may be moving into, holy cow, this ain't like Chernobyl, this is even worse territory.
Correct. And Chernobyl was only one reactor. Here we got 6, 4 of which are already popping their tops. So.
And as Mike Whitney notes, predictably the media has switched into full BP oil spill mode, making every effort to minimize the disaster and to soothe the public with half-truths and disinformation.
Yeah.
But at what point, and you know, that raises the ultimate question, I suppose, Cossack, and that is, at what point does media perception actually become reality? And by that I mean, look at how thoroughly and masterfully the for-profit media have ignored the Gulf Coast. Now, yeah. You know, I know you listened and many others did when Dar Jamal was talking about the actual truth on the ground there. And people who get deathly ill from one trip into the ocean. You know, just go out for a swim, come back, get sick, nearly die.
Correct.
Other people who, you know, are and you know, it's not like that's a one-off. The number of people, at least one of whom is a part of our Horn family, who were poisoned and had lungs ruined as a result of what went down in the aftermath of September the 11th, 2001, when the what's her name, kind of sleazy Rice, and Christy Todd Whitman, wasn't that her?
Yeah.
All the air is perfectly safe to breathe. Breathe lots of it.
Correct.
You know, there's thousands of those people.
Yeah.
And you know what? We only go back and talk about those stories when the Republicans in Congress make the mistake of publicly saying they wish they would die.
Yeah.
And so the question that I ask with all of that as prelude and prologue is, how long does it take before the same treatment starts being applied, if it isn't already, to Japan and to everybody who feels the brunt of the radiation? I mean, if radiation monitors are lighting up in Hartsville, South Carolina, or North Carolina, or where the hell ever, then what are they doing on the California coast? I mean, I understand it's cumulative, but the nearer you are to it, isn't it a matter of the nearer you are, the more you get?
Correct.
You know, there's radiation in the rainwater on rooftops at Case Western Reserve. You know, that's a science university. They tend, to take things like science fairly seriously. And I'm pretty sure that that's not just something that they made up to make life interesting in Cleveland.
No, no.
And of course, what comes next is that with the coming of warm weather to the Northern Hemisphere, the jet stream's going to move.
Yep.
And it's going to move back northward, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what brings winter, when the jet stream sinks southward and allows cold weather to come down with it, or cold air to come down with it. Well, it's going to move back north, so, you know, congratulations, Canada. Hello, Norway.
God.
But, you know, it's okay, Cossack. It's okay. Because the CEO and jobs creation advisor to President Obama, Jeffrey Immelt, well, he's going to get a big bonus this year. Even though it was in part his reactors, right?
Yeah. Oh, they're all his.
But here's the big trick. This isn't like BP, and this isn't like the Exxon Valdez.
How so?
You don't have the immediate presence. You know, this is just radiation.
Yeah.
So what happens is you count on the statute of limitations to save your oligarchic ass. And if people get, you know, look, if there's cancer clusters in 20 years, blame them on the goddamn CT machines. What the hell? That wasn't the reactors. That radiation never got anywhere. It's right there. It's under the concrete. Concrete and sand. By God, the next 50,000 years.
Yeah, right. Well, like I said, that's one of the rather large problems that we had at NCRP. We were working on a project of how in God's name do you figure out what kind of signage to leave future generations, even if you find a place to bury your nuclear fuel, your spent nuclear rods, how do you market so people know not to go there?
Yeah, like 1,000 years from now, when people aren't reading Japanese or English.
If they're
10,000 years from now, if they're not reading at all.
Exactly.
Or if they're not people, you know, a million years from now, or you know, 500,000, 100,000 years from now, when it's the race of intelligent 6-foot-tall cockroaches, what do you do about, you know, well, they don't have to worry about radiation. They're cockroaches, right?
Well, yeah, but they're not quite as...
But no, this is some...
radiation, but yeah.
This is some scary crap. Let's see, soil contamination found 40 kilometers away from Fukushima, 1,000 times higher, 1,000 times iodine, 4,000 times cesium standard. Let's see. The level of contamination in the soil could be twice the amount that was compulsory evacuation for Chernobyl.
Correct.
And I go back to Sandra's question. How do you evacuate 1 million people?
Yeah, well, if it gets to Tokyo, you got 13 million to worry about. Where do they all go? I mean, that's one of the problems that I've always had with the idea of evacuating the cities. How do you evacuate? You know, trying to evacuate Washington is impossible.
Well, now, here's the hint. And this is, you know, this goes back to, you know, and this is not me putting on the robe with the moon and stars and the frayed velvet. No. I have argued for a very long time, Cossack, that we have very little conception of exactly how fragile our society and our culture is.
Yeah.
We, you know, there's not a city in the United States that has more than a 2-week supply of food.
Correct.
Atlanta, Georgia, home to some several millions of human beings, depends for its water on a river that you can walk across and not get wet up to the middle of your thighs.
Correct.
The Chattahoochee.
Yep.
I've done it. We have no idea. No idea. Oh, by the way, meanwhile, just because you'll get a kick out of this, Agnes sent me a link earlier because we were kind of wondering what the hell was going on. We heard this humongous boom at 4:05 p.m.
Uh-huh.
And so, guess what?
Oh.
And I don't know. We think it was blasting because they're just kind of getting feeling their oats over at the Indian coal mine across the river. But by the same token, today at 07:26:22 UTC. There was a 2.5 magnitude earthquake in western Virginia.
Ooh.
Where nobody thinks there are any faults. But you know what? Let's build some more godforsaken sludge dams.
Oh, that's not a good idea. Considering most of them are urban.
Well, or near enough. You know, if the Brushy Fork Dam, which holds back 9.8 billion gallons of liquid toxic waste. You know, that thing lets go. It sends a 60-foot wall of water all the way to St. Albans, West Virginia, and the fun part of that whole thing is that there aren't any 60-foot-tall structures.
It sure won't be once the wave passes.
Well, no, there aren't any now. There's nowhere to go. Everybody dies.
Yeah. That's what it comes down to.
And, you know, we have no concept of how fragile, and we're fragile rurally, we are fragile urbanly. What it boils down to is we are fragile humanly.
Yeah.
And we are fast testing the ability of what is actually a global infrastructure, Cossack, to put up with us.
Basically, we're asking Mother Gaia to end this experiment.
And as Kate up in Montana might well note, I think she may be willing to take us up on the offer.
Oh, she will. She will.
Scary business, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, I tell you what, it's good hearing from you, Cossack. You doing okay these days?
Under the weather. Not so hot.
Well, yeah, and I got up Sunday morning and saw snow on the ground here. And I'm just glad the grandbabies, you know, weren't with us or anything, because I just swore. It was like ADHD Tourette's. Because I just sat looking out the windows swearing for about a half an hour. There wasn't a non-dirty word. The only non-dirty words coming out of my mouth were snow. Yeah. Snow. 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 30 minutes at least. Agnes was like, you know, do I have to get the Thorazine dart out?
But remember, Bob, there is no global climate change.
Nope.
Just keep that in mind.
Nope. Granted, 25 years ago, people would have had they're selling the onion sets up at the grocery store. Nobody can plant them. Yeah. Lettuce, you know, you're supposed to get your lettuce, your potatoes, and your onions in by now. Forget it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Cossack, have a good night, brother.
All right, you too, Bob.
All right, bye now.
There, bye.
Just got an email in from Darlene. Last thing's funny, the rest of it's not. Darlene says, in a report today that plutonium was found in the soil outside the Fukushima Daiichi power plant, MSNBC interviewed an engineering professor by the name of Najmuddin Meshkadi at the University of Southern California. He said that what is going on in Japan is far beyond what one nation can handle. He thinks the situation needs to be bumped up to the UN Security Council. Darlene puts this part in italics. He also added that what is happening in Japan is far more important than a no-fly zone in Libya. Darlene says, and if you notice, Bob, the war in Libya did knock Japan right off the front page of the newspapers, serving as a convenient little diversion, didn't it? Cossack is right. It is the cumulative factor when it comes to radiation. Again, the lamestream media isn't bothering to mention that either now, is it? And here's the fun part. P.S. I think David should win the toaster tonight for his statement, "The effing board is rigged, you dumbasses." Classic, says Darlene. I'm still laughing, but it is so true. The game's always rigged. If your name is not on, you know, if you work for a living and your name's not on the building, or at least on your door, odds are it's on your shirt. This is something Joe Bajant said. And that means that you're not part of the game. You're not in, that you, no, you, nobody taught you the lodge high sign. And it's best when one can figure that out sooner rather than later. The game's always rigged. The games were rigged before there were touchscreen voting machines. The game was rigged before there were voting machines. The game was rigged before paper ballots. The game was rigged when people were scratching initials on shards of pottery. The game is rigged! Unless you have enough money to own the game is rigged. Unless you have enough money to game the game is rigged. And it behooves us to at least recognize that so that once in a while we can sort of refuse to play. Because that's our only power. Our power isn't guns, bombs, bullets. Our only chip in the game is the question of whether or not we are willing to play. And it always has been, and likely always will be. How do we refuse to play? Sometimes the refusal to play is merely borne out in acknowledging that we know what the game is. and doing what we can where we can to make a difference. You want a really good example of the game? I got one for you here. You know, I think it was Friday that Sandra mentioned, and we talked a little bit about the lawsuit that was lost by the plaintiffs over Marsh Fork Elementary and medical testing down in western Raleigh County, West Virginia. Well, there's another one coming up, too. This one has to do with tainted water from all kinds of people. People just living their lives that had the misfortune of living their lives where some oligarchs and plutocrats were hell-bent on extracting some profit from the earth, no matter whom or what they poisoned or killed. There's going to be another lawsuit soon. This one will take place in Wheeling. This is the Associated Press story put out there and pointed to, if you will, by Ken Ward Jr. at the Gazette, the Cold Tattoo blog. The panel of judges handling claims that Massey Energy Company poisoned hundreds of southern West Virginia wells with coal slurry will start August the 1st by trying one case each from seven personal injury and property damage categories the court has created. A scheduling order filed by Ohio County Circuit Judge James Mazzone, head of the mass litigation panel hearing the cases, instructs both the plaintiffs and Virginia-based Massey to choose two cases from each category by April 1st. The three judges will then winnow the 14 proposed cases to seven and try them all together August the 1st in Wheeling in what could be the first of a series of trials. Now, you want to talk about something grim and dirty. The seven categories created by the court, not created by the plaintiffs, These are just artificial categories imposed upon the lawsuits by this panel of judges. All seven categories include property damage claims, okay? Because they have to do with the fact that their water was poisoned and their homes were damaged. But the plaintiffs are broken down by illness, as if they had not already been broken down by illness, as if they'd not already been broken down by an intransigent, avarice-infested coal company. The plaintiffs are broken down by illness, cancer or renal failure, cognitive impairment such as attention deficit disorder, colon or kidney problems, leukemia, spina bifida, or pancreatitis, cysts, boils, or internal ulcers, gallbladder problems, and chronic diarrhea, rashes, or so-called other sentinel symptoms of exposure to contaminated water. Now, why would the court do that? The court is doing that because it is better, because it was better for Massey Energy. You see, every trial costs big money. And if you're a plaintiff's lawyer and you've got skin in the game, so to speak, well, you have fronted all the expert opinion costs, all the expert testimony costs, the copy charges, the phone charges, the transportation charges, the depositions. You've fronted it all. And so where you could try them together and let the jury sit there and listen to these tales of hell on earth by family after family after family after family after family. Well, instead, the court's going to create this little artificial bubble. And it's a bubble where, you know, it's just a family, just one family comes up, well, you know, we live near some coal companies, and, you know, our water got turned the color of tomato soup, and it stinks like death when it comes out of the tap. And Johnny over there, his liver's dying, and so is he. And so the coal company argues, well, you know, this is just a one-off. You know, we feel really, really bad for the Smith family over here. But God, it's not our fault. When meanwhile, there are 20 other families, 50 other families, 100 other families, all going through the same thing. But this way, the court makes sure that the jury doesn't know that there's 100 other families. It's just a couple. And while I can't say for certain, I would be willing to bet decent money that if anybody mentions any of the other poisoned families, that would certainly be grounds for mistrial. More than 700 current and former residents of Rawl, Lick Creek, Sprigg, and Merrimack claim Massey and a subsidiary, Rawl Sales and Processing, ruined their water supplies by pumping 1.4 billion gallons of toxic coal waste into worked-out underground mines between 1978 and 1987. And don't be surprised if the first of those 700 cases come toddling back with a verdict for Massey Energy. Because the jury will have been deliberately misled. The jury will have been deliberately lied to. It won't be a sin, it won't be lies of commission or sins of commission. They will be lies and sins of omission. Because you won't see the 700 people. The jury will not see 350 families with scars on their bellies or headstones over the dirt that lies over top them. They won't see them. And that is just another aspect of the game. They're playing for money. We're playing for our very lives. So it's time to get out of here for this Moran Monday edition of The Horn. Thanks, everybody, for joining in. A little fundraising update. We have three more days left to try to meet our monthly goal. And considering what didn't happen over the weekend, just a few folks contributed. Well, it's going to be a big uphill climb. Thanks to the one individual who contributed during the show this evening. That contribution took the place of three $10 contributors, meaning that we are now at 57. We need 57 people, $10 apiece, and we're finished for March. Is that possible? I sincerely hope so. Because that's what keeps all this going. And frankly, we've got things to do on the road here in the next week and a half. There's a big deal coming on early April, some citizen enforcement training that you might want to pay attention to. And there's another big deal coming April the 9th with Chris Hedges. But you know what? We got to be able to get there. March pays for April. April pays for May. So 57 folks, $570, and we're done fundraising for March. Any help you can give is greatly appreciated. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. The tab is called Contribute. Also there you'll find the snail mail address if you prefer to help out that way. Either way is fine. So thank you very kindly. Everybody have a great evening. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go. John Fox, our chief engineer in Australia. Ben Birch, who makes all the streams do the streams magic at White Rose Society. Thanks to our chat room moderator, Lottie. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our op-ed columnist, Reverbo. He's been on a bit of a hiatus, but the creative juices will start flowing again. Thanks to Matt Osborne, our Southeast correspondent, osborneinc.com. He is trying to get himself a scholarship to Netroots Nation and could use your vote. How to do it is at osborneinc.com, osborneinc.com. Thanks always to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coalriverwind.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next. Stick around, only on The Horn.